He's going to get the rosette because that was a cracking story. Really good to speak to you, Robert. Thank you for joining us today, live from the Labour Party Congress in Liverpool. Thank you to all of our guests, Lisa Nandy, Tony Adams, and a right old panoply. We will be back live tomorrow from 2 o'clock with Keir Starmer's speech. But stay tuned. It's Drive with Tony and Holly next on 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Drive.
Good afternoon. Yes, it's Tony and Holly here with you until 7 o'clock. First, let's get your BBC News headlines. And we start this hour with Lebanon's health ministry saying 21 children are among more than 270 people who've been killed in an intense Israeli bombardment. At least 1,000 have been injured. It has become the deadliest day in nearly a year of the cross-border conflict. The Israeli military says it's hit Hezbollah targets across southern Lebanon. Hezbollah says it's fired dozens of rockets at Israeli military posts. Dr. Nazat Onsaliba is a Lebanese opposition Member of Parliament.
It is time for diplomatic efforts, and it is time for the international community to step up and really resolve the issue of Israel being the powerful invader of Gaza and southern Lebanon.
As you've been hearing, the Chancellor's promised the Labour conference in Liverpool there will not be a return to austerity under this government. She was trying to strike a positive tone before next month's budget as anger continues in Labour's rank and file about cuts to winter fuel payments. Rachel Reeves told the conference her choices will be tough but fair. As the Chancellor was giving her speech, nurses in England rejected the government's offer of a 5.5% pay rise for this financial year. The Royal College of Nursing says two-thirds voted against it in a record high turnout of around 145,000. Our health editor is Hugh Pym.
This does not mean an immediate ballot for industrial action. They want the government, particularly Wes Streeting, the Secretary of State, to take note of this and come back with some supportive noises. So at the moment, this is very much a message to the government, but obviously no further discussion on strike action at the moment, but it certainly hasn't been ruled out.
The Environment Agency's issued 21 flood warnings for central and southern England, meaning flooding is expected. Heavy rain and thunderstorms have already caused road closures and damaged houses and places. In southern London, AFC Wimbledon Stadium has developed a sinkhole and part of the pitch's surface has been washed away. Prosecutors in the US say the suspected gunman who was arrested near Donald Trump's golf course wrote a note months earlier saying he intended to kill the former president. 58-year-old Ryan Ruth is due in court in Florida later facing gun crime charges. And you're up to date with the news. Let's get your sport with Delith Lloyd.
Afternoon to you, Holly. The Friedkin Group have agreed a deal to buy Farhad Moshiri's majority stake in Everton. It'll be subject to Premier League approval, but it brings an end to a long and protracted saga. The news comes with Sean Dyche's team lying 19th in the league after six games and having picked up their first point on Saturday. The Friedkin Group says, "We look forward to providing stability to the club and sharing our vision for its future, including the completion of the new Everton stadium at Bramley Moor Dock." The Football Association will be taking no further action in regards to any of the incidents from yesterday's game between Arsenal and Manchester City. City striker Erling Haaland was seen throwing the ball at Gabriel's head after his side's late equaliser, then arguing with Gabriel Jesus at the final whistle. And Glamorgan held their nerve to beat Somerset by 15 runs and win a truncated one-day cup final at Trent Bridge. Glamorgan made 186 for 7 in their shortened 20 overs, thanks to an unbeaten 63 from Sam Northeast. Somerset managed 171 for 6 in reply. It's a second title in 4 years for Glamorgan.
A look at your travel. So wet weather out there. It's concentrated at the moment in the East Midlands. Northamptonshire also affected. And Gloucestershire, the M5 was closed. Junction 12 at Quedgeley, northbound. They've reopened one of the lanes now. So 12 to 11A. Two lanes are still closed. Queues are backing up to Junction 13 at Stroud on the M5. And the M58 on Merseyside heading east. Switch Islands, but it's through to Junction 1 at Kirby. Barry repairs underway there. The M40 heading south. Junction 12 at Gaydon. Heavy traffic after an accident with one lane closed. closed after a brief hold. The M25, one lane still closed now at Romford. That's at junction 29, so heading anti-clockwise, it's really slow. The M2 in Kent and barrier repairs underway. Westbound at junction 3 for Chatham, one lane closed. The A127 South End Arterial Road. And on the westbound side, a lorry's jackknife, so it's blocking the whole of the road near the Dunton Junction. And the A1 Western Bypass in Gateshead is really slow, passing the Angel. That's at junction 66. Orna Merchant, 5 Live Travel.
Cheers, Orna. Thank you, Delith. Orna, I thought of you only yesterday.
Was it a problem?
I drove up a mountainous way. It's somewhere, it's somewhere I've heard you pronounce many years, and I thought I'm on a mountainous way.
That's Blackpool, isn't
near
it?
Near Fleetwood.
Yes, yes.
What were you doing there?
Just perusing. Oh. Just cruising up and down with me.
It's one of the busy routes.
Me Westie on it in a seatbelt on the back.
Very
seat.
Nice.
Just having a look, but I thought, yeah, I'm on a mountainous way. It's somewhere I've heard Orna mention all these years.
No travel problems then?
No, we were fine. I nearly texted her.
Going all right.
All fine on a mountainous way. Would you have appreciated that? We were on Radio 2 yesterday. You were, probably.
I was, yes.
Yeah,
I was.
I should have done that. They've got a mention with Michael Ball.
You'll have to do that next time.
Thank you. Hello, Holly.
Hello,
welcome
good afternoon.
Welcome to the show. Holly Hamilton's with us all week here on Drive. Holly has done every show on 5 Live, but this one.
I feel a little bit like the Mr. Ben of 5 Live. Yeah. Really, just put any sort of jacket on me and off I go.
So you've weekend breakfast.
Yeah, late. Weekend breakfast. I've done mid-mornings. And Patrick Kilty's show. Colin show as well.
Pretty much everything.
Do you know what I've realised, though? They tend to be early mornings. I don't know what that says about me.
This is very civilised.
This is very civilised. I like this. The problem is coming in, when I normally come into work, it's in the tiny hours of the morning. You don't see anybody.
No.
I'm seeing everybody. Today it's lovely.
Factoring in Delith and Orna, it can be a bonus. That this Delith, the best show to work on Drive. Can you say that without fear of being
no comment?
I was just going to say problem with this is everyone's listening too, and they are.
No comment. No,
it's up there, Tony.
I'll remember that.
I'll let you know at 7 o'clock.
We better say what's in the show. What is in the show? Oh, yeah, we're going back to the Labour conference very shortly. Matt Chorley's going to be speaking to us from there, so we'll be back with Matt in a moment.
Because we cannot get enough of Matt Chorley today, let's be honest. We're also going to bring you the latest from the post office inquiry. That, of course, continued today. That's at about 4:10. And as Delith was just telling you, we'll be talking about the new owners of Everton. That coming up at 5:30.
Yeah, we're going to catch up with the grassroots football team that we said we'd follow their fortunes throughout the winter. And also, if you won £1 million on the lottery, what would you do? It's the first on Drive in my 10 years on Drive. I've been playing a millionaire at Crazy Golf in the first ever Drive Open.
Oh,
what's happened?
2 inches short.
Literally.
I mean, we're not being filmed, but no. I was a bit annoyed because I sort of.
Well, okay, you've only got yourself to blame, David. Put it in the hole. Are you going to put it in the hole?
It's going. It's in the hole. It came off the foot onto the towel into the hole.
Oh, there we go. I mean, we've all heard Joshua and Dubois at the weekend. Can any sporting event get more dramatic than that? And you've just had it.
This is what people are tuning in for. Yeah, this is what the people need to hear.
I'm glad you've said that because I've wondered that for 10 years. And that is it. So who won the Crazy Golf Open? You'll find out later on in the program. But it did lead to a quick discussion. I say quick because the travel bed's going to. This is another thing that happens, Holly. We talked so long.
Yeah, the travel bed runs out.
I've got a minute. We're all right.
Okay.
What's the weird. When have you ever built a sporting arena in your garden? So he's built this golf course and he lets all sorts of charities come and play, which is great.
Yeah.
Paula on the team was saying earlier on, one of her mates when she was young got a pool table in the garage, so everyone piled around there. We built a water slide once.
Everyone has a friend with a pool table.
All the kids, hose pipe on some bin bags taped together and all the kids came and played on that.
Yeah.
So when have you built a sporting arena of sorts in your garden and what happened is the question.
Okay.
Nobody might answer it, Holly. We'll see.
I know what I want. I'll not reveal just yet. I know what I want.
No, it's what have you done?
Okay, not very much.
8850 585. If you want to text the show, or you can WhatsApp us 0808 590 9693. It's 4:08.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Checkered Flag Podcast. Keeping you up to date with everything Formula One.
It has been utter dominance for Lando Norris, who wins the Singapore Grand Prix.
It was an amazing race. A few too many close calls. I'm a bit out of breath, but very fun one.
Next up, Austin, Texas, and an intense 6-race sprint to the end of the year. The Checkered Flag Podcast. Listen now on BBC Sounds. The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Drive.
Yes, thanks for listening. Holly and Tony with you on Drive. Then the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has promised there will be no return to austerity as she made her first Labour conference speech since taking charge of the country's finances. She's promising hard but fair choices to sort out the economy. And as you'd expect, the Chancellor didn't hold back from attacking the Conservatives.
Never forget what the Conservatives did. 2 years ago today, in their clamour to cut taxes for the richest, they crushed the economy, sent mortgages spiralling and put pensions in peril. And you will hear many things at their conference next week, but you won't hear an apology. No apology for the cost of your mortgage. No apology for crumbling classrooms and rising waiting lists. No apology for mismanaging our public finances, degrading our institutions and crashing our global standing in the world. They do not care. And they have learned nothing.
Now, it's fair to say the Labour Party has had a bit of a tricky start to life in government. There have been controversies about donations, the cut to winter fuel payments, accusations of being too negative about the economy. And Rachel Reeves' speech in Liverpool was also interrupted by a heckler.
They paid the price for their incompetence, their dishonesty and their rule breaking.
I think you get the gist. That protest was about arms sales to Israel. She did brush it off, saying Labour's no longer a party of protest. As for allegations of being too negative, Rachel Reeves ended her speech with an upbeat message for the country's future.
We changed our party. Now let us change our country. This is our moment. Our chance to show that politics can make a difference, that Britain's best days lie ahead, that our families, our communities, our country need not look on while the future is built somewhere else, that we can and we will make our own future here. A Britain trading, competing and leading in a changed world. A Britain founded on the talent and the effort of working people. That is the Britain we're building. That is the Britain I believe in. Together, let's go and build it.
So, yeah, you could say the Chancellor adopting a more optimistic tone, which many voters and Labour supporters have been hoping for. But the question is, are you feeling more optimistic? And that was the subject of the phone-in with Nikki Campbell on 5 Live here this morning.
I'm 22, nearly 23 now, and I'm not trying to be all dire, but I've not really seen anything but misery.
The nation voted for change and good, so I'm optimistic that if the nation backs the new government, then that's a good start, and that's what we need to do.
Desperately wish I could. I'm trying hard, but it's difficult at the moment.
I do feel that gradually we will see improvement.
No, I think it's become a very risky and expensive environment to start a business in the UK.
Oh, blimey, Nikki. I listened to this, and what I find depressing is the general public in this country, in the UK.
Well, there we go. That's the mood on Nikki's show this morning. We are expecting more detail in Rachel Reeves' first budget next month. She did talk about, though, establishing the post of a COVID corruption minister to look at contracts handed out during the pandemic and the launch of free breakfast clubs in hundreds of schools, 750, I think, from April. Well, as advertised, if you've been listening to 5 Live, you've heard him all afternoon. 5 Live's Matt Chorley is at the Labour conference in Liverpool. Joins us now. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Tony.
Hello. Big questions first. Has everybody paid for their own trousers? Do we know? Have you?
I can confirm I have paid for my own trousers. In fact, I bought myself a pair of new trousers at the weekend. Didn't like them. Took them back. That's how sensible I am with my money.
Did you not try them on before you took them home? Just asking.
I did, but I think it was something about the lighting or something in the changing. You know, when you get it home and you suddenly think, that's not right at all.
Yeah.
So I took them back.
I always see clothes on models and I think they'll look great on me, and then I realise I've got my body and not the models. That's exactly the main problem.
The trousers look really good on the mannequin.
Yeah. It's like when when I was younger and asked for George Michael's hair, and they gave me George Michael's hair, but sadly I didn't have his head. But you learn, that's how you learn, that's what you live and learn. Matt, what have we heard? First of all, I asked this just because the Communication Workers Union have just put out a press release in the past few moments saying pretty much encouraged by what Rachel Reeves had to say, but, you know, it's going to be still a tremendous worry for pensioners about the winter fuel allowance. Did she address that today?
Yes, she once again. So there's no sign of a U-turn on that question. They are sticking with removing the winter fuel payments for anyone who
for the better off pensioners. However, there was a bit more. Yes, we are listening, we understand, but we, you know, we don't want to take these decisions. Actually, the sort of the big political argument they're making is that in the Conservatives went for austerity as a choice because they wanted to cut budgets. They're saying, look, we don't.
Matt, it's Tony. Can you hear me? All right,
it's cutting in and out. Isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Are you moving around or are you stationary?
I am. I've been standing very still in the same. Yeah. Let me.
Can you
move
stand
slightly and see if it makes any difference?
Okay.
I know.
That's
not better.
No, it's terrible.
So you must have gone through a lot of tunnels. Well, look, I don't know what we're going to do. I'm looking through the window at the technical team. They're
a lot of shrugging shoulders.
Yeah, maybe just plough on, Matt, and I'll jump in again if it becomes unlistable. No, it's not going to work, Matt. Well,
no.
We will call you back, I think. Yeah, we do.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll go to the other microphone.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea. How far away is that?
The running is definitely going to help.
We might stay with you then.
Yeah, this is
exciting.
This is, keep us up to date.
We want a sporting event. It's like the Labour Party Olympics.
There's a tractor.
Can you get on it? It might be quicker.
I went in it earlier, actually. Tooted the horn, got told off.
I heard you dissing his plastic eggs earlier.
Well, how can the NFU come to a conference with...
I don't know.
Are you on the other microphone now? Almost.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Sorry about this, everybody.
So if you're just tuned in, Matt's surely making his way across.
Live on the radio. Here we are.
Labour Party conference.
Here we
are. Oh.
Are you there yet?
I can't go on there because there's somebody else on there.
Right, Matt, we'll call you back.
Call me back. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. These things happen. We'll call you back, mate.
Lovely stuff.
Okay, there he goes. Have I established we're going to call him back?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to call you back.
See, I say these things. I don't know if anyone is going to call him back.
Like a real-time voice.
Oh, they are going to call him back in a moment.
I'll give you a call back in just a few minutes. I think that might be the first time that's ever happened at a Labour Party conference, though. Somebody running through and searching for...
A lot of people texting. Oh, look, texting in just briefly. We're going to have the first ever Drive Open Championship later on. A bloke, a millionaire, has built his a crazy golf course in his back garden. And we've been asking, what sporting arenas or events have you hosted in your back garden? Mark, in a very wet St. Neots, who says, P.S., I think we can go water skiing after this, says, we lived in Colorado for a few years and had a lot of snow every winter. The local kids were used to it, but our kids thought it was amazing. So we made a toboggan run down the drive. And all the neighbourhood came round. Good fun.
Well, listen, can I point at the listeners to this show are very highbrow.
Yeah.
With this sort of, and the fact you've set the bar really high by talking about a sporting arena in the garden. I feel like with a garden of mice, I don't know. It's more like I've got a very small football net. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
it's for a 3-year-old and that's as good as it gets.
Try this from Keith in Crewe, who says, during COVID, this is interesting. During COVID, my neighbour and I fixed small Velcro tennis bats to our rear house wall. We created a 9-hole golf course. We used the balls from the Velcro set and the aim was to use a wedge to try and get the ball to hit the bat that was stuck to the wall.
Balls from the Velcro set. They've really thought this through. And they've modified a litter picker so they can reach up to the high bats if they've hit a high... This is good. There's imagination has come into play here. This is better than the little goals I've got anyway.
Yeah, so that's Keith in Crewe, who's done beautifully filling in. Thank you very much for that, Keith. While we got Matt Chorley back from the Labour conference. Matt, hello.
It'll teach me to try and use some high-tech kit. Won't
I know.
It's sort of... like an electronic handbag that they'd given me, which meant I could walk around and bring you the live atmosphere of the conference.
Oh, never worth it.
Well, we definitely got live atmosphere, if that helps.
So I'm now back on the string and yoghurt pots, and it seems to be working much better.
It always pays on 5 Live to aim low, Matt. I'll just throw that in.
I'm learning. I'm still new, Tony. I'm learning.
Yeah,
I'm learning.
Best not to move. So, Matt, where were we? Oh, yeah, Rachel Reeves and Winter Fuel and all that kind of thing. You were explaining her thought processes.
Yes, so those of us who sort of follow these things closely and you know, little subtle changes in language and messaging and that sort of thing. Yes, they're saying there are difficult decisions to be taken. There's the £22 billion black hole, which the Labour government says that was left for them. They say they've got to take difficult decisions to address that, including removing winter fuel payments. But the thing they're really emphasising is trying to say that in 2010, David Cameron, George Osborne, the Conservatives, they went for austerity because they wanted a smaller state. It was what they wanted to do. They wanted smaller budgets for government departments. They wanted to take benefits off of people. The contrast, because I said, I interviewed Lisa Nandy on my show, and I said, well, that's what you're doing. You're cutting budgets and you're taking benefits off people. And what they're trying to say is they don't want to be doing it. That's not what they're in politics for. So it's drawing an ideological difference between them and the Conservatives. They're saying it's not a return to austerity, dot, 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 the sort of austerity that David Cameron and George Osborne did, where they wanted a smaller state. They're saying they are being responsible with the nation's finances, but ultimately want to invest to grow the economy and do all the things that they're talking about. So it's interesting that the big message from the Labour government's party conference in 2024 is an awful lot of talk about what happened in 2010, but trying to draw that distinction between the motives behind it rather than actually the pounds and pence that people might end up with in their pockets.
And Matt, what is the mood there? I read a dispatch, but admittedly in a newspaper not favoured towards the Labour Party. So that was kind of the view they had. But they're talking about the mood, that it was not as triumphant as expected because of Winterfuel, because of all the donor issues that you mentioned. You were saying closed gate and what's it gate and all that kind of gate. What is the mood amongst those gathered there for the conference?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, we shouldn't downplay the fact there are a lot of people here who've been there through the thin times. You know, Ed Miliband's leadership, Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, when they felt like they were a long way from government, and they are very pleased that they're in government. There are loads of parties with, you know, DJs and karaoke and triumphant speeches and people playing Things Can Only Get Better over and over again. They are very, very pleased that they won the election, and they are pleased that they are in government. So they are, you know, they're very happy to be in government, albeit alongside that, gripped by the fact that being a government is quite difficult, and you get difficult headlines, and you have to take difficult decisions, and you have to do things that you didn't want to do, and you can't do things that you did want to do. But these are all problems that any political party would rather have. The Conservatives would rather be in government, albeit with difficult headlines and, you know, difficult decisions, than not be in government and have, fewer people turning up to your party conference. So I think we should probably keep it in context. There are some people, including cabinet ministers I've spoken to over a glass of white wine, who will tell you they're a bit annoyed about the Sue Gate row or the clothes row or whatever it might be. They're annoyed that their budgets are being cut. But they're problems they are happy to have because they're in government, and they haven't had a party conference in government for 15 years.
Matt, great stuff we got there in the end, and you'll be there tomorrow as well for your own programme. So we'll look. Oh, you're coming back
on
later.
Back, yeah, don't go anywhere.
Oh yeah, who knows what I should be talking to you
on
there?
Yes, exactly that. Exactly.
Not sure of the conference we'll get later.
Matt, send the pigeon now.
I want a fax machine is being fired up.
All right, cheers, Matt. Speak to you later.
Speak to you in a bit.
Goodbye. Right, it is Drive with Matt and Tony and Holly, and it is 4:22.
Yeah, and the final phase of the inquiry into the post office scandal started today. Our correspondent Andy Verity has been following this for us. Good afternoon to you, Andy.
Hi, afternoon.
Look, the way this was kind of summed up to me earlier, and I think it sets it out perfectly well, up until now when we've focused on the inquiry, it's all about everything that's happened in the past. Yeah. And what's been laid out there and what's gone wrong. Now we're looking at what is currently happening within the post office and still what's going wrong.
Yeah, that's right. And this reaches back, as you know, about 25 years when the Horizon IT system was brought in. And it looks like it actually hasn't improved like you might have hoped after years of scandal and an excoriating judgment 5 years ago. There was a survey that was published this morning of sub-postmasters and what they thought of the Horizon IT system now. And 49% are saying, well, they're dissatisfied or very dissatisfied. Now, if you're an optimist, you can say, well, maybe 51% weren't then. But on the other hand, they're still saying that they're having issues like, for example, phantom transactions that they can't connect to the reality of their cash flow. They are having screen freezes, you know, those sort of basic IT problems that we all know from our own computer systems at work and at home. But actually, still, those discrepancies, those shortfalls are happening. And in some cases, about a third of sub-postmasters who responded on this point said, actually, they seem to be happening still every month. So those very things which led to all these misconceived prosecutions, more than 1,000 people prosecuted who shouldn't have been, are still going on.
And a lot of people hearing this might actually be surprised that this Horizon IT system is actually still in use in post offices, let alone functioning right.
Well, right, yeah, especially when it's responsible for so many, well, more than 200 people wrongly going to jail, thousands more ruined. But yet, if you're going to replace it, you might have further problems. And although there have been some moves afoot to try and replace it, those have been equally fraught. So the hope is, I mean, some sub-postmasters say, look, it's fine now, things are okay. But there's still a bit of a lack of training, a lack of understanding. And the other thing is that sub-postmasters, after everything that's happened, you'd have thought that the board would be listening to them after all the public fuss. But most of them are saying, the vast majority are saying, they don't believe the board has been listening to them. Now, it may be that you've got a bias in here. You know, the people who've responded to the survey may be the angry ones, and there may be lots of others who are quite happy who haven't responded to the survey. Nevertheless, not happy reading for a post office if it's going to make any sort of claim that it's sorting things out.
And this conversation, this inquiry has been going on, what, since 2020 now? We're into what I think the final 2 months is what's being predicted. What can we expect to hear? What is left to uncover, and who will be the focus of it?
Well, among others, the top civil servants who have been conspicuous by their absence, if you like, in the inquiry up till now. As you say, it's been going since 2020. It got put on a statutory footing in 21. And everybody, of course, is paying much more attention since that ITV drama in January this year. But we can hope for example, the permanent secretaries, the top dogs in the Department of Business. Martin Donnelly's going to be there. Alex Chisholm, who was the top dog when the litigation was going on, when they tried to get rid of the judge who said stuff they didn't like, he's going to have to answer some questions too. So I think there's a real drive by the barristers for the sub-postmasters and also Sir Wynne Williams to try not to leave any significant stone unturned and to try to press accountability for senior executives. But we're also hearing, for example, we heard from a non-executive director, Saf Ismail. Now, he was a sub-postmaster's representative on the board of the post office, and he said he was excluded from discussions about Nick Reed's bonus. He was kept out of the room for those discussions. And he also said that as recently as January, it still felt that sub-postmasters were being treated as guilty until proven innocent. So still lots of discontent and still a feeling that things aren't getting sorted out yet.
And Andy, I'm sure you'll keep us across it. Andy Verity, our correspondent there, thank you. It is 26 minutes past four.
It is. Driver Tony and Holly, back garden Olympics. We've already had tobogganing in Colorado and this brilliant inventor game of Velcro balls being hit with wedges against Velcro tennis bats screwed to the rear house wall of Keith and Martin in Crewe.
I'm not going to lie, I had to read that a few times. Yeah. I think that needs to come with instructions.
But it seemed to be very effective. So look, listen, when have you built a sporting event or an occasion in your back garden? 85058. We're asking this because David Lawrence joins us now. David won £1 million on the lottery and decided to build a crazy golf course in his back garden. So I chatted to him earlier. We even had a hole or two between us, which you'll hear. And one of the inspiring things about David is he built the course well. He lets lots of charities, people with learning difficulties, play it as well. So here he is, David Lawrence on his crazy golf course.
Started sort of 20-odd years ago. I used to take a group with learning disabilities to a parents' home in Goring, and they had a little one-hole golf course, putting course. And one guy in particular, Peter, he was normally very, very shy and sort of wouldn't really talk much. He would love, we'd do it twice a year. And it sticks in my mind. And then since then, I've done other charity fundraising. Sometimes we've used putting. And it just occurred to me when I was very fortunate a year ago, September the 16th, that this lovely back garden that I'm talking, you know, to you from, it would be conducive to three halls, which we've now set up. And it was wonderful on Tuesday. We had a various mixture of groups.
You've been very generous and opened it up. Just describe the course to us, because I can see a giant scaly tail. I don't know if that's an alligator or a dinosaur, David. What have you got on one of them?
Basically, yeah. Hole number one is the Pugsy Hall. I've been raising money for Pugsy. And that's with the coloured fencing going around in the colours of the spots on Pugsy Bear.
Right.
I've always supported that and had the privilege to meet Terry Wogan with a group in London probably 10, 12 years ago. What a lovely evening that was. So that's hall number one. Hall number two is the Jungle Hall. Yeah. I laugh because it is a giant-sized crocodile there.
Crocodile.
With, looking out at it now, and it's still obviously mind-blowingly brilliant.
Yeah, where do you get a 20-foot crocodile from?
Well, funny enough, you can almost get anything these days on the internet. There's a range of things you can get. Now, my lovely the oldest granddaughter, when she heard what I was planning to do, she went, "Gaga, can you make sure you get a flamingo?" So again, Tony, I don't know whether you've got the picture. We've got a lovely, again, you know, full size flamingo.
I've got a picture here of an alligator's tail, a flamingo, and a monkey pointing to the model of a bloke, the model of a bloke in a hat. Is that a waxwork?
It's me.
Oh, right. Very good.
Yeah, no, me with my hat on, which the wife said, because that, you know, it was sunny, but also very windy. So I had to catch that hat a couple of times.
At your discretion, groups, charity groups can come and play it, can they, David?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first one took quite a lot of planning. I'm already planning the second one because, as I say, I've always, for 35 years, raised for children in need. That's very close to my heart. It was fantastic.
It's a great thing you've done. Where are you in the garden now?
Yes.
Well, have you got a club with you? I mean, we should be playing.
Now, listen, Tony.
What?
We don't know each other. You're very welcome to come in. I'm going to tell you, right, nobody's been able to do hall number one. The alligator crocodile hall.
Well, have you not got a club and a ball there you could have a whack with now?
Of course.
Well, let's do it.
You want me?
I'm going to have the first ever game of radio golf because what I'd like to do, David, is you hit two balls, one for me and one for you, and we'll see which one goes in the hole. So let me just paint the picture then. So this is the Drive Open, okay? One hole, winner takes all. Is it number two? Are we on the alligator hole?
Right, I am on hall number two.
Right.
I've got the massive crocodile staring at me. Right. I've got the monkey staring at me and also the flamingo.
Sounds like hall number two.
Does it?
Right, so look, who's going to go first, David, you or me?
Shall I go first?
You go first.
Okay.
You go first. Okay. It's your course.
Right.
Okay, so right, go on. Describe the shot as you're going to take it.
Right, it plays a little bit left to right, but the wife made this so much easier because the tail of the alligator comes round the back of the hole. So if you get the end of the tail, it guides the ball into the second hole. So it makes it a lot easier.
Right, well, go on. Let's hear you go.
Okay, I'm going.
Here we go. Oh, I heard that, yeah. Good shot.
Oh.
What's happened?
2 inches short.
Literally.
I mean, we're not being filmed, but
no.
I was a bit annoyed because I sort of...
Well, you've only got yourself to blame, David. Put it in the hole. Are you going to put it in the hole?
Well, okay, this one.
Yeah. No, you put your ball in the hole and then it's out the way of mine.
It's going! It's in the hole. It came off the foot, onto the tail, into the hole, Tony.
Is that my ball or yours?
Well, I was tempted to say it was mine, but I was 2 inches short, so that was your ball.
So I've got a hole in one.
You did. You did.
I'm thrilled.
A lot of people did, but it is a good hole.
I don't diminish my achievement.
You did get a hole in one.
So what a pleasure that was, David. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure, Tony. As I say, there'll be a lot of spin-offs in a good way because Tuesday was fantastic. Talking to the couple of parents earlier, they're just amazing. It's been a real joy. And there'll be many others because I love my sport and I love putting.
Well, I can tell by talking to you that you're a good man, David. So it's lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And you take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
I love people like David Lawrence.
I could talk
to them all day. There you are. He's built a crazy golf course in his back garden. So when have you built anything remotely sporting in your back garden and other people have joined? And this is great from Simon in Budley Salterton, who says, when I lived in Ireland some years ago, I built a show jumping course for my goats.
Standard.
They all loved it and no faults were incurred. How high?
I have heard that about goats.
How high can they go?
Yeah, they're pretty high, actually. Oh. They can jump pretty high. I don't know. What,
Did you decide I was the expert there?
No, because you said no, no. But you said standard, so I thought you had some knowledge of goat show jumping.
Yeah,
that's
goats,
all.
Well, I nodded.
I didn't just assume it. I don't assume anything.
Well, love goats over there. Don't
I could do with your CV, and then I could know exactly what you're expert in. Right. Anyway, so goat show jumping, that kind of thing. What have you built in your back garden or yard or front yard or pavement, whatever. Anyway, 85058. That's the kind of sport you want, Deli.
The Olympic gold medalist Tony Roberts.
Yes.
Well, he won the climbing, didn't he, at the Olympics, the Paris Olympics.
Right.
His dad, years ago, build an entire wall in his back garden.
He
and
did.
Years later, he's winning gold for Great Britain.
Famously, Paris Olympics. Mondo, of course, as well. He had his very own...
Mondo Duplantis, yes.
That's
yes.
It. Yeah, that's how he started as a six-year-old. He had a pole vault in his back garden.
I interviewed the climber and I watched Mondo. I watched Mondo in action while I was covering the Paralympics.
How did we fall into that?
I allowed that segue far too easily.
Listen, you deal with the goats, I'll talk about the Olympics. That's kind of where we are.
Just put me in my place.
If you want to text the show today, you can. Feel free, 85058 or WhatsApp is 0885 909 693. Time for news and sport now, 4:34.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And these are your BBC News headlines. Lebanese officials say an intense and far-reaching Israeli bombardment has killed more than 270 people and injured at least 1,000. It is the deadliest day in nearly a year of conflict across Israel's northern border. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told the Labour Party conference she has a relentless focus on the financial priorities of the British people. During her speech, she promised there'd be no return to austerity in her autumn budget. Nurses have rejected the government's offer of a 5.5% pay rise for this financial year. The Royal College of Nursing in England says its members rejected the deal by 2/3 in a record high turnout. And the Environment Agency has issued 21 flood warnings across central, western and southern England. The Met Office says some areas may see as much as a month's worth of rain today. Dallas got all the rest of our sport today.
It is the season, isn't it? The rain is coming, Holly.
It is.
Good news perhaps for Everton fans, if they view it that way. But Everton have announced that they've reached an agreement with the Friedkin Group over the sale of the club. It will be subject to Premier League approval. Dan Friedkin, who also owns Serie A side Roma, had agreed a deal in principle to purchase current owner Mashiri's 94% stake back in June. Talks were then called off in July after the two parties failed to finalise an agreement. But a deal has now been agreed and signed. The Friedkin Group say we look forward to providing stability to the club and sharing our vision for its future, including the completion of the new Everton Stadium at Bramley Moor Dock. Well, BBC Radio Manchester's BBC Radio Merseyside sports reporter Julia Bould says any reservations the Friedkin Group had has been resolved.
An issue in the summer related to a loan 777 have put into Everton. They had some concerns around it and walked away. Since then, we have seen John Textor, who is co-owner at Crystal Palace, have some talks. Now, he didn't have exclusivity, and that's because the Premier League says you can't own two clubs at the same time. So it seems over the last week, the Friedkin Group has had a resolution to any concerns they had over that loan payment at Everton. And within a matter of days, they've held talks with Farhad Mashiri, the majority shareholder at Everton, and now a deal has been signed.
More on the Everton takeover in the next hour on Drive. The FA will be taking no further action in regards to any of the incidents from yesterday's game between Arsenal and Manchester City. Erling Haaland was seen throwing the ball at Arsenal's Gabriel's head after his side's late equaliser. He then argued with Gabriel Jesus after the final whistle. The match was full of incident, not least Arsenal forward Leandro Trossard being sent off after being shown a second yellow card for kicking the ball away at the end of the first half. The former Premier League referee and ex-head of referees Keith Hackett has told Five Live he should have known better.
Michael saw that as kicking the ball away and as such issued that second yellow. It seemed harsh. What worries me a little bit is that when players are on a yellow card, their behaviour, they need to take a bit more care either with their challenges or with any other action, and they just need a bit of common sense.
And Glamorgan have beaten Somerset by 15 runs at Trent Bridge in the one-day cup final. Glamorgan made 186 for 7 in their 20 overs before reducing Somerset to 171 for 6 in their innings. It's a third disappointment for Somerset after they missed out on silverware to Surrey in the county championship and Gloucestershire in the T20 Blast. However, it's a second title for Glamorgan in 4 years. Player of the match, Sam Northeast, says it's a great end to the season.
Yeah, it's been a long season. I think everyone's put in so much effort, and to end the season with a trophy is just, it's great personally, but great for the team. I think everyone's put in so much hard work, and to finish, I know it's late in the season, but it's such great efforts from everyone, and I think well deserved.
And that's the latest from BBC Sport. Remember, you can listen at any time through your smart speaker by saying play BBC Sports News.
The latest travel, the M77 in Glasgow northbound at 1 at Dumbreck Road. An accident is partly blocking the road. You've got heavy queues there and heavy traffic on the M58 on Merseyside. Heading east, it's near Switch Island, so it's where the M58 joins the M57. Through to Junction 1 at Kirby, it's completely blocked now. Barrier repairs are going on. The M56 and westbound queues leaving Manchester. Junction 6 at Hale Four Seasons roundabout, it's a breakdown. It's in one of the lanes. The M5 in Gloucestershire heading north at Quedgeley at 12. Emergency repairs still going on after the accident this morning, so queues backing up to 13 at Stroud, but all lanes are open. Then you've got the M1 northbound at Junction 5 at Watford, heading out of London. Repairs going on there as well, with one lane closed. Quite a lot of localised flooding showing up as well. M27, both directions looking slow because of a breakdown at Junction 8, Burslem, one lane down on each side. The A421, Kempston in Bedfordshire, both directions are closed to and from the A6 and the M1 at Junction 13 for Bedford. That's flooding. And some suspensions on the tubes. So part suspensions on District Line and Piccadilly Line. Check ahead, Orna Merchant, 5 Live Travel.
Cheers, Orna. All right, on a mound in its way.
It's all going well.
If you're just tuning in, you missed my searing anecdote. From Fleetwood at the weekend, yeah. I only mentioned it again because we had a text in about a mound in a sway. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it, yes.
Hello. I used to travel on a mound in a sway on my trips from Preston to Blackpool to take my daughter to school. This is where it gets interesting. Okay. Well, it is interesting. Yeah. She was actually in the same class as the daughter of the man who designed a mound in a sway.
I am completely out of my depth here, by the way. Yeah. My geography. Mind in a sway.
A mound in a
sway. A mound in a sway.
A mound in a sway. Yeah. Orna mentions it quite a lot in her travel voices.
Is it busy? Busy.
Very busy.
Oh, okay.
Clogged.
There we go.
Heads out of Blackpool.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's only of interest if you're coming out of Blackpool.
Yeah. Thornton and Cleveley's.
What? Yes. Thornton and Cleveley's. Good. Right. Anyway, Orna, thank you.
We digress.
Delith, we're talking about things in people's back gardens. Someone texts this. So didn't Adam Peaty have a big bath structure?
He did.
Oh, you know this.
Yeah. Because
in lockdown.
During lockdown.
Yeah.
Exactly. A lot of the athletes resorted to those sort of tactics.
I think Greg Rutherford back in the day, didn't his dad build a long jump in his garden as well, a sandpit? Yeah.
A long garden for that, have you? Or not?
Well, you'll have to ask him. I presume there was a bit of a run-up.
If you had a sandpit, you could start on the front street and run right through the house, couldn't you? That would be interesting. So assuming all the doors were in line.
Reece McClanagan as well, because of a lack of facilities, a slightly sadder story in that case.
In
Northern Ireland, he had to resort to having his own pommel horse in his garden.
Did he?
Yeah.
See, we've hit on something here. I'm not quite sure what. What about my dad, says this texter, had a self-designed frisbee golf course in the field behind his house in Dorset. It's a par 18. And I got the first ever pole in one on a frisbee golf course.
There's definitely a theme here as well. It's the parents, and you know what it is. It's the parents. My daughter's going to be an Olympic gold medalist someday if I put a sand pit in the garden, let them jump into it a few times.
When I was 13 or 14, says this texter, my dad built my sister and I a table tennis table, which went in the garage. It became an event in our school summer holiday Olympics. You got 2 Mars bars for gold, 1 for silver, running, jumping, and cycling. But it also included cello playing because the lad who gave us the Mars bars played the cello. Happy days. I won gold in the table tennis despite accusations of cheating. Good. So when have you built a sports arena in your house? Is that the question?
I did make fun of you earlier for wording it like a sports arena, but actually now someone has said that they built a mini Olympic athletic stadium in their garden. A long jump, a high jump, javelin, with a bamboo stick with a skewer tied to the end.
Who says that?
This is Ruth. Ruth had that's dangerous for a start, she admits.
You wouldn't want to be neighbours, would you, if you've got a javelin?
Can I have my javelin back? Well, you come and I get my dog off it.
Oh, and obviously a running track in there.
Anyway.
No animals were harmed.
No animals were harmed in that anecdote, were they?
Possibly children.
I think someone needs to take control now and say the time dramatically. Do you want to do it, Holly, or shall
Yes,
I?
Let's, in dramatic fashion. You're listening to Five Live Drive. It is 16:42.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV Licence Uni.
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Drive.
It is Drive with Holly and Tony. Now, the former Defence Secretary, Sir Ben Wallace, has been facing questions from the very inquiry that he established while he was in office. It's over changes made to a draft law that meant British Special Forces would have been protected from prosecution for war crimes allegedly carried out in Afghanistan. Sir Ben, who was a captain in the Scots Guards, is said to have shortened the proposed time limit for prosecuting members of the SAS from 10 years to just 5. And today, in his evidence to the Afghanistan inquiry, he said his motivation had always been simply to discover the truth of what went on.
I wasn't concerned about image or public opinion in this, ever. I was concerned about getting to the bottom of it. Because ultimately, I believe in getting to ensure that the investigation was of a quality, and if it wasn't, why not, and what could we do to make sure it doesn't happen again. I was absolutely aware that on both sides of this discussion, there are men and women of our armed forces, 457 of which gave their lives in Afghanistan, who also feel the consequences of the public reporting one way or the other. And I was very aware that, you know, none of this, A, makes Britain look good in international circles, but also does it help morale in our armed forces.
Well, our correspondent Divya Talwar is outside the inquiry at the Royal Courts of Justice in London. Hi, Divya, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tony.
Hi. So we've briefly outlined what's going on there. What is this inquiry designed to discover?
Well, Sir Ben Wallace, as you said, Tony, actually commissioned this inquiry back in December 2022 when he was the Defence Secretary. Now, the key task of this inquiry is to look into serious allegations made against UK Special Forces in Afghanistan between 2010 and 2013. Now, it's alleged that these UK Special Forces committed war crimes by unlawfully killing unarmed detainees and civilians while they were carrying out night raids. The inquiry is also looking at the adequacy of the MOD and their response to the allegations, the investigations that were carried out, and also whether there's evidence of any cover-up. So some serious allegations being looked at by this inquiry that Sir Ben Wallace set up.
And what's the timeline here? How long is it going to go on? And what sanctions, if any, can be imposed at the end of this?
Good question, actually. I asked someone from the inquiry that very question yesterday. How long is this inquiry going to last for? Because when it was launched last year, Lord Justice Haddon Cave said, look, we're expecting 12 to 18 months. They've now said that we are definitely not running on that schedule anymore, and it certainly will go well into next year and possibly 2026. There's been delays because of the general election. There are also issues. Obviously, a lot of the evidence is being held behind closed doors in private, and there are considerations around that as well. So we're expecting this inquiry to run for a while, but Lord Justice Haddon Cave has said that the findings of this are crucial to trying to restore the reputation of our armed forces and this country. And as you asked, Tony, what Lord Justice Haddon Cave cannot do, though, is make any findings of civil or criminal liability of any individuals or organisations. He'll hand over his findings and recommendations to government, and it will then be in their hands about what decisions and what steps to make next.
Divya, thank you very much for that. Divya Talwar there from the Royal Courts of Justice in London. It's that story that we'll return to, I'm sure, in the future on Drive. On the programme today, later on, we're going to bring you up to date with those cross-border attacks taking place between Israel and Hezbollah. Lebanon's health ministry says now at least 274 people have been killed and more than 1,000 wounded in Israeli strikes today. That In their words, makes it the deadliest day of the conflict in the past year.
Yeah, you can keep across this on the BBC News website at the minute. Huge reaction. Fears of an all-out regional conflict in the Middle East have, of course, been growing in the past week. The IDF has said it's attacked about 800 targets of Hezbollah in southern Bekaa region of Lebanon today. An Israeli government spokesman, David Mentzer, said Hezbollah's attacks had killed dozens of Israelis.
48 people have been killed. 12 Israeli Druze children killed on a football pitch. I saw it for myself with my very own eyes in Majd al-Shams. Our cities, towns, kibbutzim, farms and villages bombarded with rockets and drones. No country in the world would put up with this assault.
That's the Israeli government spokesman, David Mensah. We'll get an update from our correspondent then, Daniel De Simone, who's in Jerusalem. Daniel will be with us after 5 o'clock. It's 4:48 now on Drive.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
We need somebody to look after our economy.
It's the biggest issue in Scotland at the moment.
Wherever you are in the UK, you're part of this with us on this network.
5 Live Drive.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good afternoon, it's Holly and Tony here with you until 7 o'clock. As you have been hearing, Rachel Reeves has been giving her first speech as Chancellor at the Labour Party conference. She's promised hard but fair decisions ahead to fix the country's finances, but she has ruled out a return to austerity. Now, this comes as the government comes under pressure over donations and its decision to cut winter fuel payments, of course. So let's go back to Liverpool and 5 Live's Matt Chorley, who is still there for us at the party conference. I'm wondering, have you got a plastic cup and a string at this point, given what happened earlier, Matt?
I have gone back to the original setup. I'm now sitting in a chair with a microphone and I can hear you loud and clear. We should have stopped with that in the first place.
Great. Good idea. So what's the mood there now, Matt? I know you've got a couple of people there with you,
yes.
But buoyant, well, exactly. I'd imagine.
Yeah, buoyant but hard-headed is how I would describe it. Pleased to be in government, but also, you know, a bit concerned about all the difficult decisions. But yeah, you're right. I'm joined by two new Labour MPs elected for the first time this year in traditionally Conservative seats. Rachel Taylor from North Warwickshire and Bedworth. Hello, Rachel. Good to see you.
Hi. Hi, Matt.
And Tim Rocker, the new MP in Macclesfield.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you with us. So in answer to Holly's question, first of all, how would you sum up the mood, Rachel?
Yeah. I think it's really buoyant, but I think we're under no illusion that there are quick fixes to the mess that we've been left with. I think we're determined that we've got a long-term plan, a decade of renewal. It's really exciting to hear announcements on the skills levy, announcements about breakfast clubs being rolled out in 750 schools. We've got huge, huge, exciting projects on the horizon. We've already said that we're going to bring railways back into national control. We're going to put bus services back into the control of local authorities. And we've got really exciting times ahead, and my constituents are looking forward to those changes coming into effect. But nothing is going to be a quick fix.
What about you, Tim?
Well, it's despite it being a rainy Liverpool, the atmosphere of the conference is really, really positive. First conference in power for 14 years. Ministers have been really, really quick off the mark in the summer, getting things moving on the initiatives that Rachel was just talking about. I'm here with a delegation from Macclesfield of local activists who are really excited that we're getting on and doing what we promised to do. We were elected on a manifesto and we're actually doing it, which is a bit revolutionary for politics in this country.
Is it the case, then, do you think, that it would be better if there was a bit more... Because, you know what, there's lots of announcements being made and legislation coming through and positive, you know, if you're one of those schools which is going to get the breakfast clubs, that's real-world changes. Mm. Would it be better if there'd been a bit more focus on that, Rachel, rather than the sort of the doom and gloom, things are going to get worse before they get better stuff? The rhetoric about that, particularly we've heard from the Prime Minister and the Chancellor in recent months.
Yeah, but I think there's been a mixture. I mean, we've been in government for, 11 weeks? And every single week that I've been sitting in Parliament, we've made another new announcement, something else that we're going to fix. And I think that's really, really exciting. Yes, things are going to be difficult and we've got to make tough choices. We can't just keep offering up things and gimmicks like we've had under the Conservatives. We're really setting to work putting things right. It was really great to hear Rachel talking about the COVID Commission actually investigating all the money that was wasted under the last government. We're doing things, and we're doing things quickly. People will start to feel the effect straight away. Already, the triple lock on pensions, people will start to feel better off in no time at all, I'm sure.
Tim, do you worry about the doom and gloom message? We've even seen it being fed through into consumer confidence. Mm. You know, the figures on, you know, if you want to stimulate the economy, if you are going to give people pay rises, you need them to go and spend that money, not hoard it because they think something terrible is coming down the track.
Well, look, Rachel and I spent a long, long time during the election knocking on doors. And the thing that shone through, at least for me, was that people want to know how bad the situation is. They want politicians to be straightforward with them. So I think it was absolutely right when the books were audited and Rachel discovered as Treasury officials brought to the information that there was this black hole in the nation's finances that had been covered up by the Tories, and that things weren't all rosy in the garden as they were trying to make out. Now, we've done that piece of work. People understand, and they did during the election as well, that it's a decade of national renewal that we're talking about. We're not going to turn things around instantly. So we've done the piece of work of making sure the public know how bad things are and what we're going to do to fix it. And actually, the motto of this conference, Change Begins, is exactly what we're about now. We're fixing the foundations, getting on with change, and delivering really practical
stuff.
You talk
about a decade of renewal. The trouble is that events happen, and whatever it is that you plan to do, they get overtaken. Boris Johnson talked about spending a decade in Downing Street, and he was out within 12 months. Liz Truss talked about, you know, there's a decade-long project of what she wanted to do to the country, and she was out within 6 weeks. People who are finding life tough right now or turn to public services and are told, sorry, you've got to wait, they don't want to wait 10 years for that to be sorted out.
No. But people who want to see a doctor need to see a doctor quickly. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a consultant obstetrician the other day, and he said, thank goodness that you've come into government and you've fixed the junior doctor's pay dispute, because I was turning up to carry out operations and just wasn't able to do them because of that dispute. And there are things like that that people will start seeing the benefit of straight away. And I think they want politicians to be honest with them. They don't want politicians who are going to promise things and not be able to deliver them. I think they are trusting us because we've set out clearly what we're going to do.
I just want to finally ask you just how big an issue the winter fuel payments cut has been to you and your new inboxes, which are now up and running and flooded with emails. Winter ago but one, there were 18,500 people in your constituency, Rachel, who were claiming winter fuel payments, 21,000, Tim, in yours. Are people cross, angry, worried, Rachel?
Yeah, I think there are a proportion of pensioners who are worried. And you know, I found that in my surgeries, and I've rolled out extra drop-ins so that people can come and see me and I can help them with claiming pension credits and also looking at the household support fund. And there are people who are seriously concerned about the situation they're going to find themselves in, but I'm able to help them. There are other people who are clearly saying to me, look, I didn't need it. I used it to pay for extra holidays, or I used to give it to the grandchildren.
So you think there are some people who can cope without it?
There are some people who can cope without it, but I think we need to concentrate on those that we really need to help.
Just briefly, Tim.
Yeah, it's not a decision that we wanted to make, but, you know, the mailbag was actually quite varied. There were people saying, like Rachel said, that they didn't need it. There are others that are worried, and we need to make sure they've got access to pension credit and that they understand that the triple lock means that pensions overall over this parliament will be rising.
I haven't even asked if you bought your own clothes, but I should mention that Rachel is wearing a spectacular bright pink suit.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Vinted.
Okay.
This came from Vinted, and when I've used it enough times, it will go back on Vinted.
Fabulous. Really good to see you, Rachel Taylor and Tim Locker, thanks so much for joining us on Fire Live. Back to you, Tony and Holly.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we don't get any time to find out what Matt is wearing. You'll just have to wait until tomorrow afternoon. He'll be back on air at 2 o'clock. It is just approaching 3 minutes to 5.
Yeah. Now, you may remember the other day we picked a grassroots football team to support for the season. I'm very pleased to say Anne Bland from AFC Market Bosworth joins us again. Now, they're a brand new team. We play in Division 2 of the Leicestershire Women and Girls League. Last week they had their first game. It was a Market Derby. They were at Market Bosworth against Market Harborough. Anne joins us. Hello, Anne.
Hello, both of you.
Hello. Yeah, Anne, meet Holly. Holly, meet Anne.
I'm very excited.
Hi, Holly.
I'm a fangirl here.
Yeah. Anne, how did it go?
Right, OK. It wasn't
the best result we could have asked for. Oh. We did get beaten. It was quite a hefty defeat.
Okay.
But whilst the scoreline wasn't in our favour, the attitude and the commitment of the girls definitely was. We played the entire game three players down. Oh. At one point, we played four players down. We were absolutely ravaged by injuries, illness. So we started off with eight. Then our goalkeeper, come defender, Kerry, sustained a head injury in the second half, so we were down to seven. But we carried on and we kept fighting right to the end, and Beck scored our consolation goal and it got the biggest cheer of the day.
Oh, you got a goal.
Okay, not the right result, but definitely the right attitude.
Yeah, that sounds just like amateur football should be. And presumably everyone left the match thinking they want to come back and do it again, which is the important thing.
Absolutely, definitely. We had a good team spirit at training last week, which we then took to the pub afterwards.
Yeah.
So definitely heading in the right direction. We signed three new players this week.
That's
so
handy.
It's looking good. It's looking better. We've got a good squad now. We can get those injuries out of the way. Just onwards and upwards now.
Yeah, I mean, to all that talk about Arsenal at the weekend and playing the second half with one man down, and you're there with just seven players on the pitch for the second half, but three
Absolutely.
New players. I mean, it's looking like this team is an attractive option at the minute moving forward. It's got a bright season ahead.
Definitely has got a bright season ahead. And the good news is it was cup weekend yesterday.
Oh.
And we're through to the next round of the cup. Oh. And we're undefeated this season.
Oh, do you get a bye?
Okay, we didn't actually play,
no.
But the other team forfeited it. But we'll take it.
Yeah, no, every cloud. So yeah, well, who are you playing next, Dan? That's the key thing. Forget Market Harborough. Who's
right,
next?
Our next game is against Brookside.
What?
I believe.
The 1980s soap?
Absolutely not. No, but that might have been probably a better game for us.
Well, listen, we'll be right behind you, Anne. We'll get you back on for a match report after you've beaten Brookside.
Absolutely fantastic. Yep, look forward to it.
Speak to you later.
See you soon.
There we go.
I'm invested now.
Tough start for AFC Market Bosworth. Getting 11 players on. It's difficult in amateur football.
In any team sport like that. And to play with just seven players on the pitch.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Thank you very much for that update, Anne. Loads of you getting in touch with your sporting events in your back garden.
Yeah, speaking of being impressed.
Yeah. I mean, we shall get through some of those very, very shortly. Right, it is time for news and sport now. Just coming around to 5 o'clock.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Drive.
The headlines then at 5 o'clock on Drive. Lebanon says more than 270 people, including 21 children, have been killed and more than 1,000 injured in heavy Israeli bombardment in the south of the country. The Israeli military said it had targeted 800 Hezbollah positions. Our correspondent Hugo Bachega is in Beirut.
We're talking about the deadliest day in Lebanon since the beginning of this conflict, the most intense airstrikes by Israel, southern Lebanon, where Hezbollah is located, in the eastern Bekaa Valley, which is another Hezbollah stronghold. But for the first time, the north of the country has been hit.
We'll have an update on that story in this hour of the programme. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has promised to make hard but fair choices with a relentless focus on the priorities of the British people. Speaking to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, she also insisted there'd be no return to austerity in next month's budget. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth was watching.
Rachel Reeves kept talking about the Britain that Labour wanted to build. She talked about getting shovels in the ground and cranes in the sky, the need for jobs and the need for investment. But despite all of that, what a lot of people are saying is the devil will be in the detail, because, of course, we've got the budget on the horizon on October the 30th, when we will hear the specific details of Rachel Reeves's plans.
Nurses in England have rejected the government's offer of a 5.5% pay rise. The Royal College of Nursing said a record number of its members voted on the deal and two-thirds were against it. The Culture Secretary is Lisa Nandy.
We'll get round the table, we'll talk to the nurses, but obviously we were elected to fix the foundations. We've got a £22 billion black hole this year alone. We've got to make some difficult choices, but already the Chancellor has announced an above-inflation pay rise for all public sector workers, including nurses.
There's been flash flooding in parts of central and southern England after more than a month's worth of rain fell in 24 hours. There are amber and yellow weather warnings for rain for large areas of England and parts of Wales up until midnight. Keith Garwood's home in Bedfordshire has been affected.
When I got up this morning, the back garden was partially flooded. Now it's completely flooded and it must be under about 8 or 9 inches of water. It's